com a fish, 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 fishing. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Just to ease my mind.
Speaking of easing your mind, you know, I actually think I've figured out what I've been up to fishing-wise the last few years. I think I'm less going fishing than going escaping. I have gone out so many times and could have caught this fish or that fish or the other fish or this monster or that monster, and instead ending up going hiding in some area where I knew there wasn't any people, and I knew there wasn't going to be much going on. And I guess it's called escapism fishing, which is Houdini, not a real thing. But
Houdini fishing.
Houdini fishing.
Houdini fishing, I like that.
Yes, I've become the master of Houdini fishing. I am going out less to catch fish and more to escape, so... I think Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ in the control center. What brought that on, I was just thinking about, you know, I see all these people with pictures of these big fish and all that, and most of the fish I've been catching have been okay. They're really nothing special. There's not, like, big monster stuff or, you know, I've caught a couple of decent fish here and there, but for the most part, they really haven't been that. I'm like... You know, I used to go out and catch all these big, giant fish. And then I had to come to the realization I wasn't fishing, I was escaping.
Yeah.
Going away from it, getting away from the whole thing. And I think that's one of the best things about fishing is you can go fishing and you don't actually have to go fishing.
Oh, absolutely.
You can get out on the water. And fishing is probably the greatest excuse in the world to stand or sit there and watch the waves and the clouds go by and just let the world turn.
Yeah, it's one of the few water sports where you actually relax by doing it. You go out and, like you say, you look at the water, you look at the sky, you see fish, maybe you catch a fish, blah, blah, blah. I think that's what it's all about. I think it's not about fish counts or how big the fish is, or even if you caught anything. What's that old joke? It's about a good day on the water is better than a bad day on the water is better than a good day in the office.
I see, but I'm one of those who absolutely believe that's absolutely wrong. I literally think that's one of the worst things ever, because to me, a job is the best thing you'll ever have. It is the greatest gift one person can give themselves is a job, because the worst thing that will ever happen to somebody is wanting a job, needing a job, willing to work, and not being able to get one.
Right.
I think that is the worst thing. And I know from experience, because for 1 month I ate government cheese. That was back in the 70s. I had the old lady and a kid and... I couldn't find a job. And I mean, I was playing guitar at night. I was taking odd jobs during the day, doing anything I could to make a buck, and I still couldn't make it. There just wasn't any work back in the late 70s. We always think that years ago were better. Oh, it was so much better back here.
Back in the old days, right, yeah.
And in the late 70s, whole towns were closing down. They didn't think the car market was even going to make it. You know, the world was collapsing. And, you know, that's the reason I'm down here in Florida. It's the reason I'm fishing Frank, is because of that economy. I came down here to tie steel on the bridges of I-75. There was work. And I went into the government office and said, hey, just take me off your books. I'm gone. And I walked out and never went back. And it was because I knew where I could get a job. So that's one of those weird things.
Well, going back to your
fishing... Go ahead, Robert.
Going back to the beginning of that conversation about fishing, you know, you said it's the only water sport, but really the coolest thing that I find about fishing is that, you know, unlike hunting or other activities, you can go by yourself and have a great time, but if you go with usually a friend or acquaintance, whatever.
I would say hunting's about the same.
No.
No.
Not where I'm getting.
Okay.
You've got, let's say you and I go fishing. You and I are sitting on the boat, and we can go out there and have conversations, whether we solve the world's problems or just chat, or we can sit in complete silence and still enjoy the time, the moment, and the day, whether you're catching fish or not.
All right.
Unlike hunting,
on,
you can't.
Where is that different than hunting?
You can't talk while you're hunting because you'll spook the game usually.
Well, then if you're sitting there talking, having a good time, what difference does it make if the game gets spooked? You can still do it. It's not like there's a rule.
You can still do it, but it's not a normal thing when you're out there in the woods. You know, usually when you're out there in the woods, most of the time you're solitary and by yourself.
Because when you go partridge or grouse hunting, you're walking along, chatting, talking, boom, 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 bird takes off, you take a shot at it.
Sure.
Sometimes the talking helps, actually, because they won't leave until they're right at your feet.
Right.
And, you know, but I'll go with it partially. But
it's just nice. It's just because it's one of those activities where it's by yourself with other people, quietly or conversating.
Fishing can be about going out and banging big numbers of fish and the excitement and the whole into it and going to tournaments and, you know, raging on the scoreboard and all that.
Sure.
It does have that other aspect.
Oh,
now,
absolutely.
I used to be into that, and I think it's okay for people to do that. It's not my cup of tea, but I know for a lot of these guys, we got several guys at the shop that are hardcore, love doing the tournaments. They travel hundreds of miles to go to these things. They spend countless thousands of dollars without ever possibility of getting money back. And usually when they get money back, it's some kind of boat that they got to get the boat, pay the sales tax on the boat, because once you receive it, you got to pay the taxes on it.
Yep.
And then they got to try and sell it to get the money they spent on the taxes back and the expenses and all that, which usually doesn't work. So, anyway, but there can be a real love of that. Speaking of gazillions...
It's more bragging rights.
Yeah, the bragging rights. I think the tournament I worked the hardest for was one little snook pin I got. And I was literally working 8 to 12 hours a day in the shop, going out fishing every night for 4 to 6. I mean, sometimes I get 2-3 hours worth of sleep. But I wanted that snook pin for the largest snook in that 2-week period. And everybody was out doing it. I mean, I was literally out. I remember I came back into the house. I had this, it was probably about a 46-inch snook. I mean, I literally woke Terry up. I'm like, look at this, I'm going to win.
Nice.
Middle of the night, it's probably 1 o'clock in the morning. She wakes up to this big snook over to bed. So
nice.
But that was all for literally a... at the time, a $5.95 snook bid. So maybe bragging rights are absolutely the way to go.
All right.
And this was all land-based.
Well,
nobody could take a boat out. You had to just, from shore, catch a big snook.
That's pretty cool.
So that was a shop tournament. That was a few years
before
you
started. I remember seeing the leaderboard on that.
Well, no, that was a different one.
Oh, that was a different one?
Yeah, this was a nothing thing between me and the guys in the shop. They were all thinking they were better than me, you know. They were going to be, you know, who was I, you know, because I was young and stupid. I didn't know much, but I knew I could outfish them. All right, speaking of outfishing, this is the year where there's absolutely no redfish, there's no snook, there's no anything out there. Oh, my God. How are you explaining all these redfish in the ICW right now, Robert?
Maybe they're mistaking them as large whiting. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're large red whiting. Anywhere from, what,
carp?
26 to 40 inches?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people catching a lot of big redfish out there right now. And normally there's usually just a lot of rat reds around. And for some reason this year, we've got fish along the ICW that I'm hearing about from Captiva all the way up through into North Lemon Bay, where they're catching 25 to 40-inch redfish, and it's one fish under this dock, two fish under this bush, one fish in this pothole. They're not grouped together. They're
now,
just in long
say
stretches.
That's the normal, but the exception of it is we've had... I've got about four guys I've talked to over the last week that literally find a dock and sit there, and there's 20, 30 big redfish underneath that dock. And it's not the normal. You got to hunt. You got to find it. But there are a few of these docks that are holding massive amounts of these fish. And the normal is exactly as Robert's saying. There's a couple here, one there, a few here, a few there. But there is some pockets of a lot of these fish. Guys going out catching 30 to 50 of these fish, fishing one or two docks.
Yeah.
And it's the exception. Most of those are in the inside of Gasparilla Island. No, I don't know which one particularly. If you had caught 30 redfish underneath the dock and were telling me about it, would you tell me exactly what dock it was? I don't think so. Considering I'm on, you know, radio shows and internet stuff and newspapers and magazines, I mean, you probably don't want me to know exactly which one.
Right.
But the weird part about it is I'm hearing it's free-lining shrimp, and the bigger the better. The big dead shrimp tails, live shrimp, they'll hit the smaller ones, but they're actually bigger fish looking, you know. I think the bigger shrimp are actually getting their attention.
Right.
But it's literally just tossing a shrimp underneath the dock and waiting for all heck to break loose.
Yeah, how are they doing with artificials right now?
Literally nothing on these.
Really?
I haven't heard of any of them being caught on artificials. The ones on artificials have been the typical redfish up on the east wall, west wall, way up into some of the canals and creek systems. But these bigger fish that are along the ICW, it's 100% a shrimp thing.
And it's weird because you have a couple guys trying to throw some crabs at them.
Pinfish, cut bait.
All this stuff, but it's like a shrimp bite. But you try and tell people in that there's a different bait for different times of year.
Right.
Which fish are going to eat a lot more of.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know why exactly it is, but I mean, I can go to Luigi's in Charlotte Harbor and have, I can go there pretty regularly throughout the year. But I guess even I don't want to eat there every night, every day. Even though I love the food there at Luigi's.
Right.
I think sometimes your body craves different stuff. Like you're standing in front of the refrigerator, it's 10 o'clock at night going, I'm really hungry, but boy, that ain't what I want, that ain't what I want. You're like, your body's trying to tell you, you got to have something. And maybe fish just respond to that craving better than people do.
They follow their natural instincts a lot better than we do.
So if you're going to do this, fishing the docks on the inside of Cayo Costa, Captiva Island, Gasparilla Island, you know, all the islands out there, what you're looking for is a dock with a bit of water underneath it. It really helps if there's a boat lift on the end of it, because guys powering in and off, larger boats that are tied to the dock, you know, made for offshore in the Gulf with inboards, because the guys, even when they don't run the boat, even when they don't take it out, they go out and start it. And then they put it in forward, they put it in reverse, kind of blow some holes down there under the water, just the effect of putting it in gear. These are the type of docks you're looking for. They're north end of Gasparilla Island, Boca Grande Island. Just as you come in from Gasparilla Pass, there are several docks there, and as you go along that shoreline, you can find some amazingly big fish along through there.
Oh, yeah.
But just remember, you have to sidearm cast. If you have to cast overhead and throw the shrimp up in the air to make it land down there, don't go there.
Right.
Because all you're going to do is snag people's ropes, you're going to snag the dock, you're going to snag boats. Believe it or not, the easiest way to cast is a backhand cast. If you're standing there, picture a tennis player hitting a backhand. The reason that a backhand is the way to cast is because you're less likely to raise the tip at the end of the cast. If you're right-handed, you have your rod in your right hand, and you cast up underneath the dock, and you're sidearm casting on your right side, watch the tip of your rod. I will bet you 98% of the time the shrimp gets almost the same arc as if you were casting overhead. It's because at the end of that cast, it kind of ends up like a golf swing where the tip goes up in the air and that shrimp shoots way up in the air. If you throw backhanded, sidearm cast, backhand, you're much more likely to throw at the water than up in the air. It really works that way. I was showing that to a customer this morning. He was going to fish the docks. And I said, okay, this is what you got to do. You got to pretend you're skipping a stone and throwing right at the water. I said, but if you really want to cheat, make it easier on yourself, just backhand. Because when you throw backhand, your arm's coming around and it wants to come back to your right side. If you're throwing sidearm, right hand or left hand, but on that side, as you go forward, your arm naturally wants to come up, like you're hitting a golf, tennis racket, baseball, whatever. Your natural inclination is to go up, but when you throw backhand, you don't.
That's now, a pretty neat trick, because that's definitely, it makes sense, thinking about the visual in my head of casting, because you do naturally swing upwards from your right-hand position.
And you're surprised I was right?
No, not really.
Come on, wait a minute. What's going on here? I'm losing my Fish and Frank thing here?
Nope.
Now, I know I had radiation treatments in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've got diabetes. My blood sugar's all over the place. So you talk to me, I'm a little wacky sometimes, you know. But after, you know, a few rounds of radiation in your brain and, you know, crazy blood sugar, every once in a while I'm going to be a little crazy. But that doesn't mean I'm not right.
No, that's true.
Okay.
I ain't getting in the middle of that one, boy.
Staying out of it.
All right. These big redfish. Now, what's weird about it, right now we should be in massive schools of sea trout. Just unbelievable schools of sea trout.
Right. That's not happening. The trout...
Is it your fault?
Probably.
Okay.
All the world's problems eventually come back to me. The trout have been really slow the last 2 weeks. I think part of it is the warmer waters coming up. The other parts of it, I have really honestly no idea, but guys are looking for them in shallow water. They're looking for them in deep water. They've just all of a sudden kind of played a disappearing act. I think they went into that same little porthole that snook and redfish do.
The tear in the spot, time-space continuum?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but what if you were looking really shallow water where you weren't going to expect them?
A couple guys have found them there, but they're working really hard at it. You know, that's the part that's surprising, because there's no numbers of little ones, no numbers of big ones. It literally has done a 180 to what it was 2 weeks ago. You know, guys are looking in the typical haunts like, you know, Alligator Creek, Burnt Store Channel, Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, where they're usually at in pretty good numbers. And they're really struggling to find fish of any size.
All right. So, anyway, trout fishing, not so good. Red fishing, excellent along the ICW. Pretty good on the east side, pretty good on the west side.
I'll take an oversized redfish over a trout anyway.
Yeah, well, you know.
You know, and going back to that with the trout, I think, you know, a lot of people talk about trout in a lot of weird ways, and this is kind of going off on a weird segue, but everyone talks about how weak trout are, and catching them just isn't as fun. Because I was having a discussion with a guy the other day because he wanted a different rod. And he was buying a different rod that was the same as what he already had. And he wanted it for trout fishing. So I talked him into buying a 6 to 12 pound fast taper
instead of a 10 to 20.
Yeah. And I'm like, if you want to catch trout and actually have a good time with them, downgrade your tackle. Because they're actually not a bad fighting fish. But when you're using your heavy, you're bringing a bazooka to a knife fight. It's a smaller fish. It doesn't have the stamina of some of these other fish. Break down your tackle to much lighter gear and make it enjoyable rather than going, man,
now,
these are a drag.
Here's where the basis of that come from. Any of you people out there are golfers, and, you know, I'm sure somebody in our audience does play golf every once in a while or is an avid golfer. You and I both know that when you go golfing, you go out with a bag of 7-irons. It's the only club you need. It's the only one that feels comfortable, so that's the only one you want to take with you.
Right.
You don't need all them other clubs.
Nope.
And it's just like with a fisherman. You have one 7-foot, 10 to 20 rod, and you just keep buying more of them because that's the only one you need.
Yeah.
Now, that should be standardized, right?
Sure.
You wouldn't want a lighter weight rod for when you run into lighter fish, a longer rod for casting open on the flats, shorter, heavier rods for casting close, for bigger fish, heavy rods. None of that makes sense. Just keep buying over the same one all the time.
Why do you have 800 rods at the shop?
Because I'm crazy. Oh, now, okay. I will say, if you go into the new rod and reel room, you're going to see a couple of surf rods and a couple of really long rods are like 12-foot long, some 9s and 10-foot long rods that I did not buy thinking I would sell them. But for the first time in 34 years, I can buy them and stand them up and display them, and by God, I was going to do it just because I wanted to, just because I could. It's the only reason I bought them. I don't really know of, a lot of use for a 12-foot surf rod here, but I have now raised ceilings in that new section, the South 40, where all the rods and reels are, and it's way up there, and no, I haven't decorated yet, but it's so awesome. Speaking of awesome, offshore fishing is really kicking in pretty good right now.
Yeah, the weather's been so beautiful this last week. I mean, we had several days last week where you could have probably almost water skied 30 miles offshore. It was pretty slick calm. So a lot of people have been taking advantage of that. A lot of the nearshore stuff is doing the best right now because as of the first, gag grouper closed down, even though that there's a lot of them being caught this last week. So you got to be careful with that. But your nearshore reefs from 3 to 15 miles out are loaded with some really good snapper, grunts, sheep's head, porgies. Hearing just a good mixed bag of stuff out there on those little nearshore stuff.
All right. If you're wondering, can I get out there to do this? Where are they and what all that? Go to fishinfranks.com, F-I-S-H-I-N, no G in Southern Fishing, F-I-S-H-I-N-F-R-A-N-K-S.com, fishinfranks.com with no G. Click the maps of where to go fishing and scroll down. You're going to see all these places to go fishing by the town, Englewood, Punta Gorda, Venice, whatever it is, Port Charlotte, Northport, and you're going to get down to say boat only, and it says reefs and wrecks. That, I think it's a blue button. Click that, and then slowly start scrolling down that page. You're going to see first thing you're going to see is a whole bunch of Lee County stuff, because Boca Raton Pass is Lee County. Boca Raton Pass is not Charlotte County, it's Lee County. So that's why I started there. But as you go down, you're going to see pictures where I've gone from Boca Raton Pass, drawn a line out, give you a compass heading, how far it is off from Boca Raton Pass, sometimes how far they are from the shore. Because some of the reefs are like 5 miles from Boca Raton Pass, but they're not even 3 miles from the beach.
Right.
And there's a new reef out there, 12 miles. I don't have it on there yet, but I'll be getting it on. The funniest part about the new reef they put in is that it was done at 12 miles, so six-pack captains are not allowed to fish it.
Right.
They didn't want the charter boat captains without the reef permit and pelagic species to be able to access that reef. Because at 12 miles, their captain license is only their Florida fishing license for their captain's license is only effective out 9 miles.
Right.
So once they
and
go...
probably their insurance.
Well, their insurance too, I'm sure. But because if you're breaking the law, your insurance usually doesn't kick in.
Right.
But if you have the permits, they can go out and fish then, and then their insurance would work. But by being out 12 miles, it's to keep a lot of local captains off of it. That's what the CCA thinks of captains. It was their idea, the Coastal Conservation Association. I'm
so
not
they're
sure
looking
I
out for
agree
the
or disagree with it, but
I kind of agree with that a little bit. I thought it was just a farce because it's easier to get reefs dumped in the in federal waters than it was state waters. But I kind of like that idea of being able to keep some of the charters off of them.
Yeah, only one out of, I would say, 5,000-6,000 captains actually has the correct paperwork to go more than 9 miles into the Gulf. But if you want to stay within 9-10 miles of the shoreline, just go on my website. I've got tons and tons of places you can go to, and I show you how far they are from Stump Pass or Gasparilla Pass or Boca. It's an easiest way to figure out a place where you can go out and fish. Now, there's sheephead out there, there's snappers, there's grunts, there's a ton of edible fish. But it's cold out. There's not going to be a lot of bait fish swimming around in 60-degree water.
Not much at all.
Because this is a tropical area. And if right now, I would say the big thing happening, the most exciting thing going on, is shrimping.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you don't think about shrimp migrating. Shrimp don't. Every canal in Northport, Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, every creek in Englewood, down through Cape Coral, all that, all of them have shrimp. The first few miles of the Peace River, first few miles of Maca River, first few miles of the Caloosahatchee, all of the creeks, all of the canals, all have shrimp in them. That's a fact. They really, really do. Now, these are baby shrimp, tiny little guys. And they start getting about an inch, inch and a half long. They all start moving out, kind of getting on the flats, and they get about 3 to 4 inches. And now they spawn, and what they're going to do then is, as it gets cold this year, they leave. And right now there's a mass exit of shrimp. This is some of the best January shrimping we've ever seen.
Yeah, it's
tons and tons of shrimp leaving Charlotte Harbor every pass. The problem is, it happens at night.
Yes.
Now, if everything on the planet wanted to eat you, everything, there's not one thing on the planet that wouldn't eat a shrimp. So, relatively speaking, you know,
probably an accurate statement.
Yeah, cows don't eat shrimp, as far as I know, but they might.
I don't think they would be against it.
Right.
So. But, you know, here they got, they're going to travel in dark. They're going to travel at night. They're going to try and hide during the day when they become easy prey. And they want to move at night. Now, they are not strong enough swimmers, and they do swim head first. They only escape tail first. They swim head first. Now, if you're going to go along, you can't swim against the current. They probably only swim 2 miles an hour. Getting out of Boca Grande Pass with a 4-mile-an-hour incoming tide, they're going backwards. They're not going out. So you got to wait for an outgoing tide.
Correct.
So that means you want to get there at high tide.
Yes.
You want to figure out where you're going to be, and you need lights, you need dip nets, and a cooler with some ice, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
You've been shrimping around here, RJ?
I have.
What do you take with you?
A dip net on a long pole, a light, and I usually like to use the halogen light. It's kind of a yellowish cast to it, kind of like the moonlight is, kind of yellowish.
And, good point.
And you get as close to the places where doesn't look like there's a lot of current, because that's where they seem to hold up until the tide changes. And you're right, you got to get there
Before high tide.
Just before high tide, because as soon as the tide changes, they're on the way. But if you get there that first half hour around the tide, man, there's tons and tons of shrimp along the shoreline.
What I would suggest, if it was me, I would want to be there an hour and a half before high tide, so I got time to set up my lights. You got to put lights in the water. They're attracted to those lights in the water, big time.
Yes.
So you got to get your lights all set up. And so about anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours for the high tide, you want to get there, get your lights set up, get your dip nets out. Cast net. Anybody here know anybody throwing cast nets for shrimp here?
Not down here. It's highly popular up in like Jacksonville area, but for down here it doesn't seem to be nearly as productive because they don't seem to be in as tight of groups of the way they are up north.
Well, what they do there is
they chum ball them.
Yeah, they put a whole bunch of chum in an area, and then another area, and then another area. And then when they're done, they wait about an hour to 2 hours, and then they come back and throw a cast net over that where they chummed. Mm-hmm. And technically, it could work in Gasparilla Pass or, you know, Gasparilla Sound or Pine Island Sound. Technically, it might work. I don't know anybody who's ever tried it.
I've never seen somebody shrimping with a cast net. There's always dip nets. The other thing I saw that I wanted added to the light mix, I saw a guy a couple of years ago. He had a black light, flashlight, with a black light bulb in it. And, of course, when you shine it on anything on the shore, you don't see it. It's like there's something wrong with your flashlight, buddy. You shine it in the water, and the shrimp glow. You can see them.
Good point.
I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah, I was, like, really impressed. I've never found a bulb to fit into a flashlight that does that. I don't know if he made his own rig or not, but I just thought that was so cool. He shined that light on the water, and you saw shrimp. They just all over the place where you couldn't see them before, which made the dip netting a whole lot easier.
Well, if you were going out now, as far as lights go, you can use lanterns and stuff, but your typical Coleman lantern does not put out a lot of light.
Mm.
They used to use these Hippolito lanterns, I think was the name of them. They were stainless steel, industrial gas kerosene lanterns, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like five times brighter than a standard Coleman. Now, nowadays you can use the LEDs, or one of the things that I do, if shrimping's something you like to do, you want to put a little money into it, buy an extra headlight for your car or your truck. Because, you know, but some of these new cars, the fixtures are so screwy, they don't work anymore either. But if you haven't, like me, I have older vehicles, so my headlights are, you know, replaceable. But you can get LED lights, incandescent, anything. You just want to put a couple wires to it, and probably the easy, if I'm in a boat, I carry an extra 12-volt battery with me.
Right.
And I'm not big on the lantern stuff. I'm big more on the lights. And nowadays, you can put the underwater lights in. Now, you were talking about yellow light because of the moonlight. What about the green lights? Do you think that's going to help more than the yellow light or the white lights?
Yeah, I don't know if it will or not. I mean, I just want something to illuminate the area where I'm fishing so I can see them swimming by and dip them up. So I'm going to take advantage of whatever I've got available.
Yeah,
I don't know if one's better than the other. I do like the idea of that lighter yellow light. The green light, to me personally, is easier on the eyes while I'm out there fishing. So if I'm looking around for other things as I'm waiting for those shrimp to drift towards me, I can still visually look around and see the stars, or if anyone's coming by boat or out onto the pier, I'm not blinded by my own stuff that's going on around me.
Tinfoil's your best buddy out there while you're doing shrimping. Now, I want to get lights in the water. I want to keep the lights just under the surface. I don't want to put them down 2, 3, 4 feet into the water. I don't want them down by the bottom. I want them right under the surface, as close to the surface as I can get them. Whether it's a green light, a white light, combinations would probably be good. Put a white light on one side, a green light on the other, see which one they come to the best. But you need something to shield your eyes. So if I'm putting a light in the water, often what I'm going to do is take an old piece of styrofoam, cut a slit in it, and with some hot glue or some caulking, make a floating lid for it. So the light is shining down in the water, but not up in my eyes. I want to picture something about a dinner plate size with a slit in it, put the wire coming out through the center of it. That's the easiest way to put the wire through. And put some, you know, cheap caulking through it, let it dry, and it'll hang right there at the surface. The reason you want to be at surface is you want those shrimp to come up where you can dip them with a net. If they're 3 feet underwater, they're very hard to dip.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Get them up to as close to the top. Get your lights up there by the top. That makes it easy. Now, how long a net do you need? All right? That really depends upon how you're going to go out shrimping. Let's say you're going to go to the Placida Pier / Trestle.
Right.
You're 8 to 10, maybe more feet off the water. You really think a 6-foot dip net is going to get it? All right, if you're 10 feet off the water and you have a 10-foot net, that means you can dip straight down. But if you're 10 feet off the water with an 18-foot net, that means you can reach out several feet away from the pier to dip those shrimp up. That's why your net should be longer than from your waist height to the water. Bayshore Pier, it's almost 6 feet off the water on a normal tide.
Right.
And everybody wants a 4-foot handle to go over their net fish because it's easier to carry. It won't reach the water. Now, if you're out there dipping shrimp, if you're 6 feet off the water and you have a 12-foot net, that means you can reach out 6 foot. If you have an 18-foot net, I mean, you can go out another 6 or 8 feet. You can get more shrimp. Well, more net, more bait, well, more
not,
shrimp.
Not just that, but it allows you for that second shot at them in case they jump out of the way the first time.
That's true, too.
Very true.
You know, because you dip at them and they jump. Okay, if you got too short of a net, he's already gone and under the pier or under the boat and floating away. And, you got and that extra length out there, and now you can readjust and catch them coming back at you.
Yeah, and that, boys and girls, was our common sense segment of the fishing show today.
Well,
it has to do with lengths of poles and heights of piers.
You would not believe.
And believe me, I did that. When I first came to Florida, I wanted to go shrimping. I'd heard all good stuff. It was the perfect time of year, blah, blah, blah. And I went down to the pier. I think it was it's that pier that's over by Punta Gorda, across
right.
on the other side of the Peace River. And I had a 4-foot dip net. And I walked out to the end of the pier and realized I was 6 feet short of the surface.
It's amazing.
So it was like, watch everybody else do it, you know. But thanks to Walmart back in those days, that's what they were selling, was 4-foot pole dip nets.
Well, the problem is a 18-foot net is pretty ungainly when it's all the way out. Now, the cool part about it is you can take off each section. That 6, 12, 18. So you can take off a 6-foot section or put it back on. So if you buy an 18, you've got a 6, a 12, or an 18 because it comes apart. If you buy a 6, that's what you got. Now, if I'm in a boat, I use the cheap, they're 10 bucks. It's got a white mesh on it, wooden handle. I make sure I got a couple of those with me, and then I want a 12. Because if you're like me, they're always a foot out of the reach. And they ain't going to get away from the 12, because that's as far out as I can see anyway. If they're further than that, I don't care, because I can't see them out there. But I want to be able to reach to the end of my light. I leave the 12 sit on the side of the boat. I use the little 6-foot wooden handle. It's light. It's fast. You catch more shrimp with it. But if they're all kind of cruising just out of my way, I still got a shot. And I can always take one section of the 12 off and just have a nice 6-foot net, but I still prefer the $10 nets out of a boat as my base tool.
Yeah.
It's faster, it's easier, they seem to hold up great. And
it's lighter and less cumbersome.
So one thing about this is these shrimp are awesome eating.
Oh, absolutely.
These are great eating shrimp. But now, if you're going to go out shrimping, have an ice chest half full of ice.
Yes, you need ice. Very
shrimp,
important.
A lot of times the nighttime temperatures here get in the high 70s, even low 80s at night.
Right.
Or even in January, February, March, we can have nights that are very, very warm. And if you've got a ice chest full of shrimp, they're rotting in there because the bodies all pack together. When we go to freeze bags of shrimp at the store, we never do more than 2 deep because otherwise the middle one out of a 3 high will rot before it freezes.
Absolutely.
You got to watch it. So when you go to put your shrimp in the thing, put them down towards the bottom and try and get yourself layers going.
Yeah.
And your shrimp are going to be awesome to eat. Amazingly good food out there. And they're literally wonderful. My favorite recipe for these Gulf shrimp is I peel it, you know, vein it, peel it, and I leave that little bit of tail on, kind of as a handle, and I take some pineapple right out of the can, that sliced pineapple in the can, take chunks of that around, and wrap it with a nice thick bacon, but not a pepper bacon. You have a little bit of pepper on it, but thick, good bacon, and you've got this, you put it on the grill. And once the bacon's done, you've got amazing food. You get that sweet from the pineapple plus the bacon. You've got the salt in it, and then you got the shrimp. Probably the best, one of the best meals you'll ever have. But it's not that wonderful with the ones you get in the tails in the store. But when you go out and catch these shrimp out there, and you can catch shrimp that are 6, 7, 8 inches long. I mean, mini lobster.
Yeah, definitely a mini lobster.
And I mean, they're amazing eating that way. On a grill, best with charcoal or wood. Gas grill is not going to do it good for you guys. It needs to be actually charcoal or wood.
And let me add a recipe. If you're going to boil your shrimp, it's a matter of what you put in the water that adds to the flavor. And a recipe that I got out of New Jersey many years ago was you put pickling spice in.
Okay, what's pickling spice?
Well, you buy it. It's a jar of pickling spice. It's got peppercorns and bay leaves and all kinds of other little spices mixed in. So that's the base flavor. And then you add some cinnamon and nutmeg to the water. And some people drop a little bit of curry in.
I'm going to do without the curry.
Well,
but that's okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Some people don't like that extra curry flavor, but it's amazing. The cinnamon and the nutmeg without sugar added to it has a completely different flavor. And you put that in the water, get it boiling really good, and you dump the shrimp in, and they actually come out with a golden color because of the cinnamon.
Wow. Now, it was funny. You were talking about that, saying the cinnamon nutmeg, and Robert, his eyelids are going up, and I'm looking at him. He's looking at me like we're like, really? Never thought about it.
Christmas shrimp. I thought that's where he was going with it or something. Hey. I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of the pickling spice. Yeah. I hadn't heard that one before. I got to go get some. I got to try that.
Yeah, that's my favorite boiled shrimp recipe.
And whether you're getting little shrimp or big shrimp out there, it just depends on the night. But look at the tide chart for the pass you're going to go to. There can be an hour to 2 hours difference from Boca Grande to Gasparilla. Or Boca and Captiva are relatively similar, but don't trust that. On my website, I've got all of, you know, go to the weather and tides button and then just click the tides. And you can pick the one for that specific. Every tide marker for the area is on there. That's all there is. Anybody who's got for this town or that town is just taking the one from the closest. And that's what you can do on the website. There's always for today and tomorrow. If you need a future forecast, you know, you can do the math. But don't trust that. I can promise you the tides for Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte are going to be anywhere from 2 hours to 3.5 hours different than what they will be for Boca, Captiva, Lemon Bay, anywhere. It's a massive time variant. Find the pass you're going to. You want to get there about 2 hours before high tide. Get yourself set up so when that tide starts going, you can start dipping shrimp. Have some ice chest with you, a couple different size nets. Get some lights in the water, some lights above the water, great flashlight that you can point at different shrimp so that, you know, you can be pointing at it and dip them. Helps with your aim. But anyway, other fish to catch right now. Snook fishing's been better than average all year. But I got one question for you guys on a side note. You know, I stay on topic. I like to follow our
format.
Very much,
thoroughly.
Very logical and straightforward.
And this is going to be a hard question. I'll give you guys some time. What was the best thing about 2018? It's easy to do the worst thing. For the last 500,000 years, humans have had to develop and very acute memory for bad things.
That's because if you ate it and it killed you, you know.
If it ate it and made you sick.
You had to remember the negative things.
So
that's why it stays in your brain.
So negative things stick out in your head very, very, very clearly. And it's a genetic trait that helped us survive as a species. It's rather a pain now that we're relatively civilized. At least I think you guys are. But good things are hard to remember. What was the best thing about 2018, RJ? Come on. You can do this.
I survived it, I think. It was the best thing for me. I got through another year.
All right, come on, Robert. What was the best thing in 2018?
Fishing related or just life related?
No, just related. Could be anything.
Life related? Honestly, I mean,
fishing, life, doesn't matter.
Life-wise, I mean, met a nice girl and been having a great time with that. So my life's been
on. I would say your favorite thing would be Christina fishing off the dock.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's pretty cool. But fishing-wise, honestly, fishing with you in May with Danny.
Yeah, we had a good time doing tarpon over there.
That was just fun because it's been so long since we've done that. So memory-wise of a fishing moment, that would be the one that stands out the most this year.
Yeah, but I'm going to say, hands down, you had more fun fishing off the dock this year.
I had more fun sitting on the dock, having a beer, watching her fish. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was your big thing. Any particular fishing moment, life moments, RJ? You had a minute?
Oh, that little bass that I caught out of the the ditch.
It was just such a surprise.
But it was like, I didn't know there were fish in this little tiny ditch, and it was a fair size, you know, couple
nice
of
fish.
Pounds. Yeah, it was a nice fish. It surprised me.
Now, what about you?
It doesn't have to be something grandiose and amazing. It just, sometimes the most wonderful moments are the ones that just catch you by surprise.
Okay. Yeah. How about you?
I had finished up last season, and my season really kind of goes from November through the end of April. And that's kind of my season. May and June is tourist season, which we're exceptionally busy at the store. But personally for me, from November through April, I'm booked anywhere from 1 to 5 nights a week giving talks and doing seminars and all this other kind of stuff. I'm at all these different shows and everything. And I had decided I was going to downsize this year. Mm-hmm. And I said, kicking back. I'm not going to kill myself this year. I'm just going to got to take it easy and relax. And then the guy next door moved out. I made the store twice as big as it was, added a seminar area, literally killed myself, have a hard time feeling anything in my left hand. My blood sugar is so high, I should be in the hospital right now. And
so are these good things or bad things?
You know what? I think I liked RJ's. I made it through it. We ended up with a,
I'll go with that.
Really not a bad year at the store. Everything kind of worked out. And for all of the gloom and doom and the weaponized media and social media used as a weapon against people, for all this nasty stuff, everything worked out pretty good. I'm really glad I'm here, and I'm glad we're doing the show, and I hope you guys, you know, still enjoy it. We've had just some really great things happen this year, and some really awesome people, and, you know, actually kind of look around, and, man, we weren't caught in a California wildfire, so.
Yeah, that's right. For sure, yeah.
We weren't in Mexico Beach, man. Poor people. I lived through Charlie. I lost my house, my store, my belongings, all in about 2 hours. I went from being fairly well off to nothing, and had no idea how I was going to go back and do anything, and so I really understand how the people feel.
Right.
But we're still here, guys. So anyway, because we're still here, give me the best bet for going fishing this weekend, Robert. I want to know. If you're going to take some people out, first place, have fun, catch a bunch of fish.
I'm going down to the Intercoastal, anywhere along the Placida Trestle or the Tom Adams Bridge, and going to fish for a lot of the sheep's head, mangrove snapper, a few pompano for bycatch. You know, it's just a good mixed bag going on down there, and it's been consistent. So if I'm standing on the land or fishing from a boat, that's going to be my first choice.
So a little area around Placida, a lot of different varieties of fish. Maybe not your big fish streams, but really activity fish,
activity.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
Just have a good time with.
Yeah, absolutely.
RJ, you got any recommendations?
No, not really. I still like the Myakka River Pier.
Eljabeen Pier.
Yeah, the Eljabeen Pier. That's probably a good place to go if you want to catch some fish and relax and watch the birds and things like that. So
now,
unlike you, I don't own a boat, but I own a horse. We were kidding about this a couple of weeks ago. Do you just have that to have it? Do you actually use it? We both said that to each other. And we both shook our heads like, yeah, I'm not sure.
You have a horse. I have a boat. We never get to use it.
Right.
We don't get to ride on them.
Right.
But
you got to maintain them.
Yeah. But, yeah, we keep putting money into it.
So Robert, my point being is, if you have something that you enjoy and you haven't been able to use it, this is the weekend to go and do it.
That would be a great
idea. Just toss everything else aside. Whatever it is, it'll get done next weekend. And go do that thing that you have, that you enjoy, that you haven't been getting to. That'd be my recommendation for the weekend.
All right. Now, Robert, what I need out of you is, where do you go to catch big fish? Give me a spot to go catch a big fish.
Any of the nearshore reefs, because the Goliath grouper is stacked on them pretty good.
All right. Best bait for that?
Mullet.
So
because
half mullet,
the whole mullet. I might use the whole mullet because they're spawning in the last couple of weeks, so there's been a lot of mullet offshore, so they're kind of really focused on feeding on those.
And the shrimp are going out, so shrimp's going to be great bait, live shrimp or pieces
or
of shrimp.
Or frozen shrimp.
for mangrove snappers, grunts, on any of those reefs within 10, 15 miles of the shore. There's so many shrimp going out. You really want to have shrimp on the boat right now.
Absolutely.
If you're out there and you want to catch bigger fish, if you can find big shrimp, put one under 6-8 feet below a bobber, let it drift out away from the boat. You'll be shocked at what you catch.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody always wants this or that, but sometimes it's if you go with what's leaving the harbor, going out to the deep water, you're going to catch more rather than wishing for something that's not there.
Right. Well, and guys do that all the time because they're like, well, where are they catching the fish at? And you tell them in these areas, like, say, Boca Grande, and they're like, all the way down there? It's like, you're blessed to have the time off. You're blessed to have the boat. Gas is $1.95 a gallon, so don't use that for an excuse. You've had beautiful weather. It's not blowing 100 miles an hour. Go do it. You have to go to where the fish are at sometimes. Yes, it's a drag that it's not convenient because it's not 5 minutes down the canal from your house. So what? Look how fortunate and blessed we are to be able to go fishing, have a boat, be able to have the time to use it. Go out and do that, you know. So it costs you an extra $5 in gas and an extra 20 minutes in running time. So what? You went out, you tried to accomplish your goal and probably will achieve your goal if you're willing to make that time and effort to travel a little bit. It's not always about being convenient right there.
Okay, but basically, one of the cool things is in this area, really? RJ's telling me we got 5 more minutes. I'm like, usually we quit at 5:02.
Yeah, no, we're going to go a little over today.
Oh, we're going over today?
Because the news was late, so we were late.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He controls the board. Just roll with it.
Yeah. This is why he's in the control booth. He's the smart one. Okay. Basically, freshwater fishing right now. You've got along Hillsborough Ave, you can go over there. There are a lot of spillways along there. There are a few places in Rotunda. One of the things the three of us have got to do is drive through Rotunda and find places where it's legal to pull over and catch fish there. Because Rotunda has some amazing fisheries. Snook, tarpon, bass, all in the same spot. You literally start catching one.
And tilapia.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to think of cool stuff, but that's okay. Just throw the clownfish in there. That's all right. blew it, my thanks, Robert.
Sorry.
Me. Amazing amount of freshwater fishing. I will tell you, Shell Creek has not been very good lately. I wish it was, but it just hasn't been. Up by 760, we've got snook and tarpon and largemouth bass up there between the 760 bridge thing, basically Hancock Aaron Lake, all the way up to Arcadia. And beyond, I mean, all the way up into Wauchula. The Peace River is running about 5.5 feet. Great for nice water depth, but not super strong current. So it's down. It was at like 11.5 feet. Now it's down to like 5.5, which was really weird because it didn't brown out the harbor.
Yeah, that is weird.
I have no idea why, but the river went up to almost 12 feet, which that's a lot of brown water coming down the Peace River. I mean,
right.
Thousands upon cubic feet per second, and there's 7 gallons per cubic feet or something like that, so millions of gallons per second, and or hundreds of thousands, and the water in the harbor stayed clear. The water in the canal stayed clear.
Should have browned up.
Should have browned it all up. I don't know why it didn't. Mm-mm. But east side of the harbor, a lot of small trout over there. Quite a few little snook go back around the islands. But afternoon, when that water is warming up, that's what we're looking for. Right now, the best tide to fish is outgoing, about halfway through the outgoing tide on the flats. Because as the water's pulling out of all these little creeks, afternoon outgoing tide is what we're looking for. Because all these little shallow ponds, tidal pools, they're 12, 18 inches deep, that water heats up because of the black bottom. That little bit warmer water comes out onto the flats. The shrimp start jumping. If there's any little bait, crabs, they get that warmer water. They get all excited. They start moving around. Fish all start moving in to feed on them. Whereas the incoming tide right now is being brought in from the Gulf where the water's colder. The fish get more lethargic. But those outgoing tides are pulling all the water out of the canals, the tidal pools, the creeks. That's going to get it a little bit warmer in that couple degrees. That's going to make a difference. So which tide do you want to fish? Afternoon, outgoing is going to be your best bet.
Oh, absolutely, especially this time of year.
So Fishing Frank here. Robert in the chair across me. Our captain and commander, RJ, in the booth. Steering the ship. Controlling the chaos. It's RJ. This is a radio show about fishing. We don't know what it is. But bye, guys. See you next week. Just to ease my mind.